All right. So before we start our sermon, I just want to say thank you. It's been a long time since I've preached to Korean adults, right? But I'm very happy to do so. And even today we were singing 찬양했는데요, 그 one way. I listened to that in college. I've never heard a Korean version of that. So that was 저한테는 너무 신기했어요. So thank you for that, right? That, you know, this is one way our adults take a step towards our next generation, right? So let's begin. So before we get into our sermon, I want to ask, can you remember a song from your childhood that your parents loved? Can you think of a song from your, you know, childhood that your parents loved? A song that you heard over and over and over again during your childhood because it was your parents' favorite song? I'm just going to give you a second to think about it. Okay. All right, I have one. When I think about my childhood, these are the two songs that I think of. I think many of you guys know, right? For my kids, they're like, what is this, right? And this is the second song. Right, I think we know these songs. Sounds like most of the adults here have probably heard this, right? So when I was a little kid, 조용필 was a part of my life. Because every time my dad gave me a ride in his car, 조용필's music would be playing. And I remember, what is it? I think the first one was 그 겨울의 찻집, right? Or 단발머리, right? So these are the two songs that I always remember from my childhood. Okay, and I think it's very interesting that music has this ability to surround us. Right? It's kind of always everywhere and shape us. Now, I don't listen to a lot of Korean ballads, okay? I don't listen to trot, all right, or 조용필. But when I think about my parents' choice of music, I think it influenced my love for sad R&B love songs, okay? And in the same way that my parents surrounded me with their favorite songs, the same applies when we think about how we pass down our faith to the next generation and to others. Like Moses commands Joshua and Israel before entering the promised land, you know, our desire, whether it's pastors, parents, or the church, is for our members and children to, as you know, Moses said, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. And it is the same command that Jesus repeats to the crowd in the New Testament, right? And so as verse 7 says, Moses tells Israel to teach this to their children, the next generation of Israel, so that it will go well with them. And in the same way, right, churches understand that what we are called to teach our children our faith. If we want to be a healthy church, this is what we do. And in many churches, I find it very interesting to see that when it comes to educating our children, we take the school approach. If they go to Sunday worship or Sunday school, or if they are taught the Bible by the Sunday school teacher or pastor, you know, there's this idea that we think our kids will know God and be followers of Jesus, right? If they just have that. As long as they know God in their minds, and if we just give them enough information, they will be fine. As long as we read the Bible and do our QT and pray, that is enough. Now, having the right information, knowing the Bible, and the right practices are very good. These things are all necessary. They're all needed. They shape our minds. But when it comes to educating the next generation and passing down our faith, we also need to remember to reach their hearts. Right? God says this in verse 6. His desire has always been to have what? His commands on the hearts of his people. God has always wanted obedience through a response of love. Heart and love are the motivations to follow God. This is why Paul writes in 2 Corinthians 3:3 that Christians are those who have the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. So how do we shape people's hearts, our next generation's hearts, to Jesus? God shows us in verses 6 through 9. He gives us a picture, saying, "You shall talk of God's laws when you are at home, when you are going somewhere, when you go to bed, and when you wake up." Then in another picture, he says, make God's law as something you can wrap around your hand, something you can place on your forehead, in between your eyes, frontlets between your eyes. In Israel, people do this. Okay, if you ever go to Israel, they'll have this. They'll put the scripture in here, right? And they'll write it, and then they'll wrap it around their arms. And lastly, as something you write and see on your doorposts in front of your house, like when people have framed Bible passages in their homes, okay? When we read this, he is not literally telling us to do these things. Otherwise, if this is the way we pass down our faith, most of us have failed already, okay? Or we will fail, okay? No one's gonna go send their kids and say, okay, you're gonna wear this on your forehead every day, okay? I think our kids would be very mad at us, okay? It would probably not be that effective. So what are these verses teaching us? God is showing Israel that in order to teach the next generation, it is not just knowing the law that matters, but it is to live it out. The Ten Commandments and the whole law of God was to be experienced in all areas of life, from morning to evening, to wherever you went or stayed, to even experiencing them in your senses. You know, on that point, I don't have the translation, but I think of like communion. When we take communion, right, that's what we're doing. When we're eating the body, the bread as the body of Jesus, when we're taking the wine as his blood, right? That's experience the pogrom in life, okay? It's like breathing air. It's something all around you. You don't even have to think about it. Like listening to the music that your parents played in your house. Everywhere, all the time. That's what these verses are teaching us. For the church, that means we can not only teach the next generation the knowledge of God, the knowledge of the gospel, the knowledge of Jesus, but it means living it out. And if the gospel is a song, it's letting the musical notes of the gospel play in the background and foreground of our lives. Letting the rhythms of the gospel shape our lifestyles. The church needs to have a gospel culture, munhwa, right? I think that's the word, right? Why? So that our kids can see the life-giving power and truth of Jesus, right? That's the most important, the life-giving power and truth of Jesus. I cannot stress how important that is. Our children, if you don't already know, are very observant. Anyone who has kids, who is a parent, know your kids watch you, right? They know what you do, and they follow after you. Right. And so when the truth of the gospel does not match the practice of the gospel, they will notice, and instead, they will not follow what you say, they will follow what you do and whatever is most important to you. Now, having done youth ministry for 8 years, I have seen this happen, and you know, I'll be the first to say that I don't think I did the best job, okay? Raising kids is hard. I feel the same way. Youth ministry is hard. But I've seen things. I can tell you, you know, having done youth ministry for 8 years, I can tell you by 12th grade, okay, when I look at the 12th grade class, I can tell you which kids will have a higher chance of following Jesus in college and adulthood, and which kids may fall away from Jesus. Right, if we had to bet, I can tell you, okay, this one, yes, this one, maybe no. Right? The reason being is I have seen children come to church week in and week out, and their parents are believers, and the parents are very diligent in their faith. I don't doubt the parents' faith. They send their kids diligently to church on Sundays. Right? They are taught the Bible in children's ministry and through middle school. And if we look at that stage in life, most of us would assume, I would assume, okay, when I see a kid like that, we would believe that these kids will be followers of Jesus for the rest of their lives. But I've noticed that something changes. Sometime in middle school or high school, all of a sudden, I have noticed that kids, these students have a full schedule throughout the week. You know, the parents put them into sports or orchestra, then they have to do SAT tutoring, and this hagwon, and that hagwon, and that art class, and this mizur, and because there is this need, and this isn't just church people, I just see this in our Silicon Valley culture. There is this need to get into the best colleges and programs so that they can lead a successful life. Now, in the beginning, we have the best intentions for our kids. None of these things are bad. These are all great things. We want to provide the best opportunities for our children. And some of these things our own children want to do. And we want to provide for them. So it's wonderful. But somewhere along the way, I noticed that there can be conflicts with our faith. Conflict with the gospel rhythms of life. What do I mean by that? Sometimes their schedules conflict with church. All right, and I've seen this. So we say, my kid cannot go to church today, or whenever there is something where you have to choose between faith and our kid's success, we choose success. Now, like I said, I know we are doing it with our kids' best interest in mind. You know, I wish, if I could go back and do youth group over again, so this is not up there. I wish I was more courageous to tell parents, hey, bring your kids out to church. Don't let them miss because of this, this, this. All right? Because I can only say this after 8 years, honestly, after reflecting. But every choice you make that I make, where we put God in the back seat, shows your kids, shows our kids, how important God is. I am not saying that our children have to go to every single church program. I am not saying that they cannot miss Sunday worship ever. Okay? If they miss it 1 week, I'm not going to be like, oh, you're a bad parent. You know, that's not what I mean. But if our choice is always to pick other activities, whether it's sports, music, school, whatever it is over God, that tells our kids loud and clear what has priority, who has priority. Right, that's just one of the ways I see this play out in this city. Right? But it's not just our parents. I see this amongst our students. They have this great pressure to succeed in school. Even if, let's say, the parents don't do anything. Okay, they're not like, oh, you don't have to go to the best college. Right? Very hands-off. I see that the kids themselves have great pressure to succeed in school. That they feel that they cannot take a break, a Sabbath. Right? There's so much pressure, and I would see this in worship. They would do their homework right before worship. Right until worship starts, they'd be doing homework. And right when worship ends, they're going back and doing their homework. Now, many of us will conclude, wow, they're hardworking kids. That's really good, right? Good work ethic. But when I look at it, honestly, I think it kind of sucks. I'm sorry, kids, for saying that word. Because that means there is no space for grace and mercy. Basically, they have to think that they must keep running the race nonstop because failure equals my life is ruined. You can say it's hardworking. I look at it as there's no grace. There's no grace for them. There's no margin for them. And if one of the things that we as a church, you know, our the name of our church is Grace Valley Church. If one of the things we teach them is grace and mercy, our kids cannot experience it in their day-to-day life because they have to constantly live up to expectations of success, whether our parents put it on them or whether the culture puts it on them. This is the song that they're hearing at school, amongst their friends, everywhere, especially in Silicon Valley. Right? Or, you know, sometimes, you know, some of the students will come up to me and say, I don't like church because they know that their parents are comparing them to other kids inside the church. Right? Oh, my kid is doing, you know, got this score on the SAT, or my kid's in 5 AP classes. Right? Or parents gossip about the children inside and be like, why is he not like this? Or why does she not behave? That means instead of experiencing the love and mercy of our Heavenly Father or the gospel notes in their day-to-day lives, what they experience is something far from it. It's judgment, judgment, judgment. If that is the case, it is not surprising if our kids fall away from faith. If they're not experiencing the gospel grace that we tell them, right? And instead, they chase after success or whatever else that is that we love apart from God. The gospel faith must be shown in life. Another example, if we say that taking a Sabbath rest is important, and God is important, and family is important, and church is important, but if you are so busy at work that you have no time for your family, right, and you're coming home at 11 p.m., midnight, every night, right, your actions speak louder than your words. Your kids are going to say, oh, are going to believe, right, that working hard is more important, that career is more important to God than even God. Our children pick up and follow our actions more than our words. And if we only pay lip service to the gospel, we cannot expect to just pass down the gospel to the next generation. But, you know, I'm talking about parents a lot, but this isn't just parents. This passage is just not parents. So parents don't, you know, I don't want you to feel like, oh man, Pastor Frank is he just not like parents or something? No, it's not just the parents that God speaks to in this passage. It is the duty of the whole nation of Israel. When we look at Deuteronomy 6, Moses is telling not parents, he's telling the nation, the community of Israel, to pass down the faith to the next generation. So that includes those who do not have children or are empty nesters. If our church does not have a gospel-soaked culture, our children will not believe in the God we believe. Right? If our church environment is more about judgment and legalism just amongst the community groups or amongst the church adults, they will tune out. They will feel it. So, God lays out how we pass down our faith to the next generation. But the problem is that many of us, including me, we fail to do so. We can be petty inside the church, unforgiving amongst each other. We say God is important, but our choices and actions show that we love and care about other things more. These were the same failures as Israel. Even after receiving these commands, Israel failed to love God, the Lord their God, with all their heart, soul, and strength. You look at the history of Israel. After Deuteronomy, it's not like they did well. They failed over and over and over again. So what can we do as parents, as pastors, as a church? We lean into the gospel. That even in our inability to show and teach the next generation the gospel, I want you to hear this part. We go to the throne of grace. I want us to go to the throne of grace to Jesus, who was able to love the Lord with everything he had, not out of obligation, but out of love, and do what we could not do. Right? To remember that his obedience was not merely in word, but in deed, all the way to a cross. Why? To show us that he truly loves us more than we could ever imagine or know. Even when we fail. And that's the first thing that we do. Let the gospel wash over you, that there is grace for you when you fail to love your child, when we, the grandparents, fail to love the next generation, so that when we try to love our children, it will be out of that love in which Jesus and God has showed us. So first thing that we do is, as a church, is humble ourselves. And remember, there's mercy for you. There is grace for you. Even if you have failed your child, right? Even if we have failed the next generation in this moment, there is still mercy. Otherwise, you know, God has not raised Jesus from the dead, but he has, so there is mercy. Next, and this is where I kind of want to focus on, we still need practical examples. I know a lot of times pastors, they kind of tell you things and they don't give you examples, and you're like, okay, how do I do this? What does that look like? So we still need practical examples of having gospel notes, gospel rhythms, gospel culture inside our homes and our church. How do we show grace and mercy to the next generation like Jesus has shown us? First, we share with them the stories of grace that God has shown us in our lives. And later on in verse 20, it says, what God commands Israel, that when your children ask you why you follow the law, you know, children do that, right? Where? Why? And instead of just saying, because, just because. No. God tells us, tell them the story of redemption from Egypt, that we were once slaves, and God has taken us out of slavery. So that means that we as a church can share our stories of redemption. We can share with them God's impact in our lives, because we do not believe in a dead God, but we believe in the true and living God who is actively working in us. Amen? That's what we believe. Lean into that. Why do you believe? You know, because mommy and daddy had this problem. And God humbly loved me. That's what we want to share with them. Second, how can we practice living the gospel? I want you to watch this clip from Reply 1988, okay? About how Tuk-sun always feels left out being the middle child. I think this is from the first episode. So, I know it's a silly scene, right? About an adult complaining and hurt that her parents did not show her love the way she wants to receive it. Right? And I think we've all been there, you know, when we were kids. But what I want us to focus on is that second scene gives us a picture of how we can show the next generation what it means to follow Jesus. It's not just apologizing. One of the most important parts of our faith is that we lead in weakness. You know, 2 Corinthians 4, 7 through 9 tells us this, that Paul tells us, we hold this treasure, and talk about the gospel. Jesus is the treasure that we hold. We hold this treasure in what? Jars of clay. My kids know this because we preached about this, right? And jars of clay are weak. So we hold this treasure in these weak jars, and these weak jars represent us. We hold this mighty treasure in our weakness. Why? So that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. If that is true, then with our children, can we be weak in front of them? Can we show them that you are in need of mercy? Like, that's what I like about this second scene, is that Tuk-sun's dad, it's not the apology, it's that he leads in weakness. He tells them, 미안하다, but he also says, 아빠는 처음부터 아빠 아니다. 이해해주라. That's what he says. I was never a dad before. I don't know how. Can you please understand me? He's not saying, I'm such a great dad, just listen to me. Right? And that he's trying to be a good dad. Right? I think anyone who's had a parent probably understands that. You wish that at some point in your life, you wish your dad or your mom showed you this type of kindness and grace. And I know in Korean culture, we have this tendency, we need to save face. So we are loath to apologize when it matters. And I understand for parents, it's hard to apologize to our kids when we are wrong, because it is very hard to show weakness. I'll be the first to tell you, in youth group, if I did something wrong, I'd be like, oh my goodness, I'm a bad youth pastor, I can't show them that. I'm not going to apologize. Because the world teaches us that what weakness is bad, and we have to show our strength. And so we use other words to avoid 죄송합니다 or 미안해요, right? Like, you know what I always would always hear? 너 고생 많이 했지. Right? If your kid's mad at you, and you know like I kind of messed up, you're like, 고생했네. Right? But can we apologize when we are wrong to show grace to our children? Because when we do, two things happen. When we lay down our pride, we are not only teaching our kids what forgiveness is, we are showing them. That's what we're showing them, so that somewhere down the line, they can do it too. So they can do it too one day. They can have the power to do it. Because we all know it's very hard. It's very hard. But when you do it, when we do it, it gives them permission to do it. Because it's not about my power. Second, when you show them your weakness, what you are really showing them, I think this is the most important part, what you are really showing them is that your security does not come from being a perfect parent or a perfect person, but in the perfect love of Christ and His power. That He does not turn away from you in shame, but has loved you in your weakness. And if that's where we find our security, we can be weak and honest, because we know there is grace behind us and in front of us. To me, that is freeing. That is relief. That is life-giving. So let our children not only hear, but experience the gospel in your life. Now, to the church, let me ask, because this isn't just something the parents do. To the church, can we be weak with one another? How can our parents teach our children this important gospel culture of leading in weakness if our parents cannot do that inside our church? If our parents feel like they will be judged as poor parents if their kid doesn't behave or doesn't turn out well and successful, then you know what happens? There's a higher chance that they put more pressure on the kids to act perfectly inside the church, and that is performance, and that is not by grace. So I'm asking the grandpas, the uncles, the grandmas, the other members inside our church, deacons, elders, right? Small group leaders. Instead, can we seek forgiveness with each other when we need to and show each other grace when needed, so that when our parents experience it, then our kids have a chance to experience it. Now, there are more examples, but I hope this gives you an idea and to take steps as a church where our culture is based on the gospel. As the education pastor, this is what I want to see. This is what I will be working towards. If you were a youth parent at New Hope and I failed to do so, let me be the first to say it. I apologize. That I sought the performance, you know, and I felt that I needed to be strong. That I did not lead you in weakness. That I did not lead our kids in weakness. Let me be the first to apologize. Because that's what matters to me, right? That is what I want to work towards. That the music and the rhythms that our kids experience and in our church is the life-giving power of Jesus' grace. Let's pray.